This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. You and your smartphone spend a lot of time together. You gaze at it endlessly. You talk to it, take it on long walks. You bring it to meetings and meals. Face it, you can't keep your hands off it. So what's really going on between you and your device? Does it shape your experience of intimacy or your perception of reality? 21 local artists explore these questions in an exhibit called Interface Interference. It's on view at the Carrick Modern Art in Durham. And today we're joined by three of those artists. Carrie Crocker is a contributing artist and curator of the exhibit. Carrie, welcome to you. Good day.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Fernanda Duarte studies mobile media and privacy at NC State. She also designed a piece for this exhibit. Fernanda, welcome.
Thank you for having us, Frank.
Good to have you. Jing Nu is a Durham-based visual artist and a filmmaker who's contributed to the exhibit. Hi, Jing.
Hello.
Carrie, let me ask you the first question. Where did the idea for this exhibit come from?
Well, I had already been doing artwork in the space of using smartphones as making interactive art. And a friend and I, Libby Lin, she's also an artist, we were having a conversation about a year ago and thought, how great would it be to do some work in the space of smartphones and doing things about smartphones and bring a bunch of other artists in as a group and do a group show. And we were especially interested in the idea of how traditionally you're not supposed to bring your smartphone into a gallery or a museum and you're not supposed to take pictures. It's just not allowed. But instead, we want to invite you to bring your smartphone and use it to interact with the art and also to share your experience with the exhibit. And so that's sort of flipping the tradition on its head, and we find that very interesting.
You have a piece in the exhibit that explores smudges on the screen of your smartphone.
Yes, yeah. My topic that I kind of stuck with for the pieces I created for the show was touch. Sort of as a subset of the intimacy concept. And we touch our devices constantly. And when we do so with a smartphone, you leave the smudges of the oil of your fingers behind on the screen. And I found those compositions that are left behind very interesting. And so I translated that into large paintings that maybe look at abstract until you figure out what you're really looking at.
You know, as I thought about this, got ready for this segment, I noticed a vague discomfort that I had ignored. I had sort of filtered from my experience until I thought about this. So it may surprise you to know that when I was a young man, there were no smartphones. So the way we interacted with glass was to be told not to touch it. You could not touch a window. You could not leave a smudge on it. And for the first time, I realized that I'm deeply uncomfortable putting my finger on screens, and it's because of that. And yet there's a whole generation of folks who has no such compunction or, you know, reservation.
Right. And you still have a flip phone, I understand.
Oh absolutely. Yes. Yeah. Can't touch the
Nothing
screen.
Nothing wrong with that.
No, it does. It has this kind of charming feature of being able to hear the person on the other end.
Yes, that always helps.
I'm old-fashioned that way. Fernanda, tell us about it. You have an installation piece at the exhibit, right?
Yes, it is called Truth or Dare, and it's basically it works as a lie detector for smartphones. What it does is that it monitors over tweets and adds a hashtag true or lie depending on whether a statement is true or false.
And how do we detect this truth and falsehood?
So the installation is composed of three parts. One component is a combo of the mobile app and a gadget that is reading the electric current that goes through your body. So it basically works like a lie detector. Lie detectors are based on the premise that if you are nervous, possibly lying, your sweat glands will tell your body to sweat, and that will change the amount of current that goes through your body. So that information is relayed to the app, and then that's how it adds the hashtag lie when you are lying. And then the other two components of the installation are the projections of those tweets, and when you are lying, an assortment of beacon lights go off.
So how this is interesting. So I can look up, I can tweet something, and then because I'm holding this other device, the lie detector essentially, goes through the app, it says yes or no, and then flashes on the screen this new hashtag. So it calls me out. And yet, so how have people reacted to this thing? What happens when people go through and try it?
Well, overall, people feel very intimidated, and they often ask me the question, does it work? And I tell them that depends on what expectation you have of technology. And that's the main thing that I want to bring, the main discussion I want to bring with this piece, how we relate to technology, how much we depend on technology, which are the expectations. In the perspective of the machine, yes, it works perfectly because it's consistently doing the same thing over and over, measuring numbers, comparing, defining. If that range is too high, then it's a lie. In the perspective of the user, that depends on what do you expect the machine to do for you.
And so this really gets into this whole phenomenon of our willingness to abdicate our own responsibility and sometimes even divorce ourselves from experience in favor of technology, which we've shown over and over again we're willing to do.
Exactly. I also want to bring with this project the discussion of what's the relationship between our bodies and technology. And because this app uses physiological information to define moral judgment, it is also a response to all these apps that are being released now for fitness or healthcare. We see these apps that are measuring heart rate, and they are basically trying to provide you with a standard of a healthy body or an ideal body.
And we just love a mediated experience. So the fact that I may, say, feel healthy, not enough. Let me gaze at my screen and find out what the app says about my health. And then it's validated, whereas
yeah,
just feeling pretty darn good, not enough. And so, Jing, what you've done, tell us a little bit about the audio documentary you've put together.
I've created an audio documentary that I call Mobile Memories. It is a look at people's first memories of their smartphones, their notions of what the smartphone would do for them, how it would enhance their lives. So I interviewed people whose lives existed pre-mobile and exist now in a mobile age. The biggest thing that I found was people expected these. They have such warm memories of their expectations around their device, and their memories are so distant and nostalgic, whereas now they see their smartphones as a hindrance for them to experience and be present fully.
Well, let's listen to a sample of some of the responses that you got.
The first cell phone I ever had was around 1993, 94. I was working in a school, and somebody came around trying to hawk these new cell phone concepts on all the teachers. I got one. It was about the size of a brick. It was gray. You could stand it up on end. It would, you know, be like a monument in your room with an antenna on top of it.
My first cell phone memory is from living in New York. I remember in the middle of the night, I heard a lover's quarrel, and it was one-sided. I could only hear the woman screaming, and I looked down, and I saw that she was having a fight with her phone. I remember as a child the thought occurring to me that there would be a phone number that would be mine, that would be associated with me. And I really thought that would be the end of me. But here it is. I mean, I'm hardly ever separated from my cell phone.
There we go. Part of an audio documentary produced by Jing Nu, one of the 21 artists at the exhibit called Interface Interference, on the display now at the Carrick Modern in Durham. First of all, Jing, did you record that on your cell phone, on your smartphone?
No, I didn't.
There you go. So it is kind of fascinating that you go through this trajectory of high expectations, then disappointment, and yet we keep using them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that brings me to think about my own relationship to my smartphone, and after I've created different projects about using our mobile devices, I don't use my smartphone any more or any less than I used to. And I see them as a tool. Mm-hmm. Back in the late 18th and early 19th century, it was the hip thing to do for artists and who we would call hipsters to have these black mirrors in their pockets. They would take them out and use the black mirrors to reflect the world. And it was a cool thing to do, to see the world through this black mirror. And that's how that is very similar to how we relate to our smartphones today. We use it as a tool in which to perceive the world.
Right. Well, I'd like to hear all of you talk a little bit more about that, this idea that we somehow privilege mediated experience over direct experience.
Well, I feel like when we have access to so much information and video and streaming audio and relationship with our friends, it just completely changes the way we perceive everything and the way we behave. I'm not sure if mediated by a smartphone is better than no mediation. I think it's just two different things, and it's probably only going to be moving in the direction of more mediation as there become to have more tools, because I think of my smartphone as kind of a Swiss Army knife. It does so many things for me. It's become indispensable.
Yeah, well, Fernanda, getting back to your exhibit and our preference for, I guess, a technological answer, didn't you have an experience with, I think there was somebody who tweeted their shirt color, and they had essentially got into an argument with the technology, right?
Yeah. So basically, in my understanding, all of our experiences are mediated somehow. We might differ in the type of technique or technology, but we can consider paper or voice, audio, as a form of mediation too. So we know in a way our interactions will always be mediated. In the example of the Truth or Dare app, what I've noticed is that people tend to feel very intimidated by the possibility of being caught on a lie. And eventually when the app shows a false statement that is obviously truth, when you ask somebody, when somebody says, "I'm wearing a black shirt," and it shows as truth, even though they're not really wearing a black shirt, they tend to try to justify them being wrong and the app being right. So there is an intimidation of technology.
Well, and getting back to direct experience, the direct experience would be you're looking at the actual black shirt with your eyes versus, you know, any kind of mediation of not only the experience, let's say a picture of your shirt, but also whether or not you're telling the truth about it. So to that extent, we say, well, I've got to somehow explain that the technology, which I prefer, is at odds with the experience that I'm having firsthand.
And that's the exact type of confusion that I hope that happens in the use of the app, because I want people to stop and think about how much they are relying on the technology to verify and give credibility for a statement or for a judgment. And I hope that type of confusion happens constantly.
And so some of this is this objective measure, objective measure of whether the thing has been mediated or whether you experience it directly. But Jing, you talked about things being cool too. So to what extent is our fascination with mobile technology a kind of a fad, a cultural artifact, a way of an emblem of sort of who we are and how cool we are?
Oh, certainly. I think smartphones are a tool, and like so many other things, tools come and go. I think smartphones are the tools of our time, just as the Black Mirrors used to be a tool of another time. In my artwork, I'm really interested in debunking the myth of progress, what we understand as progress, and what we're killing in the act of making something progressive.
Yeah, we got a lot less healthy after the agricultural revolution. We'll have a whole show on that someday, but we introduced a lot of things that made us not as healthy as we once were. So faster and better is sometimes slower and worse. That's one of the takeaways. Carrie, in looking at all of these, but not the only one, looking at all the pieces involved in this exhibit, what are some of the takeaways for you? What are things that struck you when you saw other artists?
Well, I guess I shouldn't have been surprised that many of the artists approached their pieces that they submitted with sort of more hate than love. We invited haters, lovers, users of smartphones, non-users of smartphones, for whatever reason that you might not use a smartphone. We've had submissions from all of those people. There is a lot of hate expressed, but there's a lot of neutrality too, and a little bit of love.
Yeah, and the fascinating thing that we adjust to, I mean, going back 10,000 years and adjusting to the agricultural revolution. I mean, you can say that wheat in some ways cultivated and domesticated humans. It brought them, look at this, we can get these people to bring us water and weed for us. Wouldn't that nice? And we'll survive a lot better. So we do make these adjustments to the technology that we bring on ourselves and then say, well, it's normal, right?
Absolutely. I've made adjustments where there's a lot of information I don't have to keep in my brain anymore because now I know it's in my pocket and I can access it, and it just makes more space in my head for other things that I need to remember.
Yeah, in my case, it just all collapsed. That just basically everything shrunk. So there you go. But anyway, it's a great, great exhibit. Thank you all for being on the program. Carrie Crocker, I should say, is an artist and curator of the exhibit Interface Interference, on view at the Carrick Modern Art in Durham. Fernanda Duarte is designed an installation featured at the exhibit, as has Jing Nu, a local filmmaker and artist. Thank all of you for being on the program.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
And the Interface Interference exhibit is on view at the Carrick Modern in Durham until May 10th. And the opening reception at the museum tonight, 7 o'clock. Find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. And stay tuned for music of the Carolina Operas.